Hey there. So this is a kind of a overdue episode for the podcast. I think by a week or two, maybe even 2 weeks. I think by keeping the podcast a little bit shorter, that's going to help me to put them out more regularly. I've been a little bit busier than usual on the weekends. But anyway, for those of you who don't know, my name is Chris Kowalczyk. I'm a ESL teacher. I've been teaching English to non-native speakers since 2007, so that's about 18 years as of this recording in early 2025. I'm based out of the LA Orange County area, but I've also taught for 6 years in Japan. And this podcast is really intended for my current and former students, basically people who already know me. It's not a teaching podcast. I'm not going to teach you how to do anything in English. It's more about just my thoughts and reflections and opinions about language learning. I was a language learner for a long time. Even though my mom's from Japan, I did have to study Japanese a lot because I don't know, I just got interested in it when I was in high school, and I thought about moving there as well. And so before and then during my time in Japan, I studied a lot. And what I like to talk a lot about is, I don't know if non-conventional or unconventional is the word for it, but basically, language learning as something that you're doing all the time and for realistic purposes. Kind of getting away from the, there's nothing wrong with textbooks, but getting away from that idea of studying a language and more like learning or acquiring it is what I'm trying to emphasize here. So let me get to kind of a, I want to keep this short today. I'm actually pretty busy today. So I'd like to keep it short, but it always ends up going longer. But I'm really going to try to keep this one short. Is I mean, the thing is, if you listen to me talk, you know, whether you're my student or on this podcast, there's a lot of through lines. There's a lot of recurring themes, and one of them is, or actually several. Here's several of them. So one thing that I always emphasize is language as necessary, if that's the right, if that makes sense. So a lot of times when people study a language, you know, they're learning things, but maybe they're that's not necessary for their goal, I should say. A lot of people study language as, yes, they want to learn it for some purpose, but a lot of times they're approaching it from a almost like a linguistic standpoint. Well, what does this grammar mean? What word would I use in this situation? Almost like an academic an approach, which is fine because, you know, it is interesting to learn about a language's grammatical features and, you know, verb conjugations and all those things. I mean, and you don't want to make too many mistakes either because that can affect meaning. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm always talking about using language in or learning language in real world contexts, okay? And yeah, textbooks can be very realistic, and they can be very helpful with their explanations depending on the quality of the textbook. But again, they're still somewhat artificial, right? Because a textbook is made for non-native speakers of English. Textbooks in particular, one of their biggest problems is that they're generic, right? Very non-specific. Now, there are American textbooks, there are British textbooks, right? There are more internationally minded textbooks as well. And but by their very nature, and it's not their fault, but by their very nature, textbooks are going to try to reach a huge audience. We're talking hundreds of millions of people or billions of people if they're international textbooks, right? Because if you're making a textbook based on, you know, Orange County, California, I mean, it's not really going to sell in New York. It's not going to sell in Australia. It's not going to sell in Vietnam, right? Like, who cares? So that's always going to be a problem with textbooks. And then they stay away from a lot of topics that are actually interesting, right? They stay away from politics. They stay away from social issues for the most part. They stay away from controversial things or just things that are interesting, like things that are a little bit dirty, right? Things that are part of our everyday life, comedy. And so that's kind of my little rant about textbooks. They have their place, but they are not a replacement for real life language. So, that's one thing. And then the other thing is you got to make language learning fun, interesting, and relevant. I mean, this is something I always go over with people. And I think we understand it. You know, I think all students understand it. But sometimes it's hard to actually apply that whether we don't have the time or energy, or we don't have the motivation. But language learning, in my opinion, in my experience, it has to be fun, interesting, and relevant. Okay, so those two points kind of tie into what I'm going to talk about here. So I wanted to talk about video games, because video games are something I used to play a lot. It was one of my, I guess, hobbies when I was a kid. And actually, for most of my life, I still play video games from time to time, but I don't know if it's lack of interest or I'm just really busy. So when I do have free time, sometimes I feel like video games are a little bit of a waste of time for me when I have free time, or I'm just too tired. Like, I just don't want to look at a screen, to be honest, a lot of times. I also don't watch as much TV or movies as I used to. I work on the computer a lot for work. So, you know, when I'm not working, I kind of don't really like looking at a screen too much. And if I have a choice between watching a TV or a movie or video games, I usually go with the former. Video games require more concentration. I'm getting old, I guess. But I'm actually only 40, but I'm kind of half joking there. So video games, right? I mean, I've been playing video games since I was a little kid, 3 or 4 years old, 5 years old, whatever. We got a Nintendo in 89, I think, so I was about 5 years old. And, of course, my mom's from Japan, and I went to Japan every summer as a kid. And so, of course, you know, with my cousins or my cousin's kids, we were playing video games over there too. And, of course, those games were in Japanese. And you got to remember, this is the 80s and the 90s where there's no Google Translate. You know, and a lot of games actually were not available in the U.S., so these days, you know, games are more international. You have a lot of game series, which are, you know, there's just a lot more translations available. And even if you don't have an official international release, you know, there's a lot of fan translations available for video games these days. But I'm talking about the 80s and the 90s when I was a kid. So my point is, actually, I played a lot of Japanese video games as well. And of course, the text is going to be in Japanese, right? Now, my Japanese was not that great when I was a kid, but I will say that playing video games gave me a motivation to learn Japanese. And I'm not even saying learn like I was interested in learning Japanese, like, oh, I'm very interested in studying the kanji and the grammar and everything. No. That came... I would say when I was about 16 or 17 years old, I actually started to become interested in actually learning Japanese. Again, studying grammar, vocabulary, writing kanji and practicing and, you know, all that stuff. I'm talking about when I was much younger, where I was just like, hey, I don't understand what this person in the game is saying. And to advance in the game or to do better in the game, I need to understand what this person is saying, right? Or this text. And so... yeah, I did have a pretty basic understanding of Japanese at that time. Words like, you know, when you're choosing the difficulty for the video game, the futsu is like normal difficulty, yasashi is easy, and then I guess muzukashi, I don't know if that's even the right word anymore, is difficult. And so, you know, a lot of those types of vocabulary. And what's funny is that because I played a lot, and this is kind of my main point, is I played a lot of RPGs, role-playing games, right? These are games with a lot of text, a big story, a lot of dialogue. You know, this is not Street Fighter where the only Japanese I need to learn is like punch, kick, you know, up, down, you know, things like that, simple input commands. No, we're talking about RPGs, role-playing games, lots of text. I mean, there's could be as much text as there would be in a whole book, right? And so I liked those games in English, of course, but there were a lot of Japanese RPGs that I couldn't get in the U.S. that were not available in English. And specifically, I'm talking about the Final Fantasy series. I'm not going to go into detail about that, but, you know, Final Fantasy at this point has dozens of games in the series. And when I was a kid, there were a lot of gaps in the releases. So Final Fantasy 1, 4... and 6 were available in the U.S., in English, of course, but 2, 3, and 5 were not. And more than that, even if the game eventually came out in English, you know, getting the Japanese copy would mean, you know, getting it a year or two early, because at that time, international releases were often much later than they are today. Which to these days, I feel like a lot of international releases are simultaneous. But I think that speaks to the expanded video game market as well. You have to remember in the 80s and the 90s, the video game market was big, but not as big as it is today, not as lucrative. So anyway, my point is, you know, I had to understand what these people were saying in the video games, the characters. If I didn't understand Japanese, I couldn't understand what I was doing, and I wouldn't be able to advance in the story and advance in the game. So I did ask my mom sometimes for help. And I want to say another thing, too, is I got these strategy guides, which were very well illustrated. I mean, I just liked looking at them. But again, there's a lot of Japanese text, and I didn't understand what was, you know, being explained here. And so that was always a motivation to, again, ask my mother or just kind of study a little bit myself and sometimes just learn as I'm going through the game. I kind of learn through context, right? And the certain words reappear. So a lot of words for weapons that even though my Japanese was not great at that time, I knew a lot of vocabulary for weapons, armor, things that you would find in a fantasy story, because these are the Final Fantasy series. What was a fantasy series, kind of like Lord of the Rings or, you know, magic and things like that. So a lot of words related to those. Hono, kaien, which is related to fire. Kori, which is ice. Ikazuchi, kaminari, I think that's related to lightning and thunder. Tsurugi, ken, which are two different words for sword. Yari, which is spear. Muchi, which is whip, another weapon. Tanto, which is like dagger, short sword. What else? Yoroi, which is like a heavier body armor. Kabuto, which is a helmet. Kote, I think kote is like an arm guard. Kusari, which is chain. So it's like a chain armor or chain weapons, kusarigama. I mean, man, I'm lots of vocabulary. And my Japanese was not great at that time. So I guess my point is that motivation is really going to carry you. And so moving fast forwarding to the time when I actually was studying Japanese in a serious way. I was still playing video games, Japanese video games at that time, and a lot of RPGs. As I got older, I started to become more interested in the Dragon Quest series, which is, I guess, kind of similar to the Final Fantasy series in that they're both fantasy game series, RPGs, text-heavy, story-heavy, a lot of reading to do in these stories, but not as dramatic or not as grand scale as the Final Fantasy series, more traditional, I guess. But anyway... The point is Final Fantasy Dragon Quest 9 and 11 were actually Japanese only for a while. Translations were available later. International versions were available later, but that was like a year or two later. And so for those games and many other Japanese games, I needed to understand Japanese in order to progress in the game. So I think you kind of get my point, right? And I think you can apply this to anything in life, really, or anything in your English learning journey, is that you've got two things happening, right? You have a goal, and then you're learning English to reach that goal, right? Or maybe you're just studying English in general, but if you have kind of a real need for English, that's going to help you with your English learning. So what I mean is, there were video games where I really wanted to play the video game, so learning Japanese helped me achieve that goal of, you know, playing the video game well. But also, I was learning Japanese or studying Japanese kind of in general, so what I would do is I would find things that required Japanese, if that makes sense. So maybe there's a movie or a TV show that I really liked, right? And that's an easy one, but you know, it's not available in English. So I say, hey, I got to learn Japanese or improve my Japanese to understand what they're saying in this TV show, right? So, you know, things like that. I guess we're getting to the idea of media as well, but it can apply to other things too. It could be something like, well, you want to improve your conversation ability. You like to do exercise. Maybe you like to do yoga. What you do is you join a yoga class rather than just doing it at home, because you need to understand the instructor when they're speaking. You need to talk to the other people in the yoga class. Well, hopefully you talk to them. You do volunteer work where you gotta use English, while you're talking to other people, while you're following and giving instructions, right? So you're creating these scenarios, whether you're working backwards from your goal or you're creating a goal, again, where English is necessary. And I think maybe that's it's already been 15 minutes. I want to kind of cut it short here, but maybe that's my final point, is that what is language, right? Language is not a subject that people study. Language is a tool for communication, that we have goals that we want to achieve through language. And I think what happens is, where why do people improve, or the people who improve their English quickly and develop it very well, are often the people who need English, right? So they're working in a work environment where English is necessary. And maybe a higher level of English is necessary, or more formal English is necessary. Maybe they're a manager and they have to read and write reports, right? And so that necessity, it's uncomfortable sometimes. It's more challenging than just using a textbook or a handout or listening to, English lesson on the audio, or watching a movie, right? Using English in what we call real life situations is more uncomfortable, but as we know, it's also going to challenge us more, but the results will be that we're going to improve a lot more than we normally would. And so I think if we can replicate that or create that ourselves, in ways that are fun, interesting, and relevant, I mean, that's awesome. So whether that's video games, whether that's movies, books, magazines, volunteer work, whatever you do, if you can keep those things in mind, I think that'll be really interesting, and helpful. Again, it's got to be fun, right? I mean, yeah, I was studying Japanese and playing video games, but I mean, I was just enjoying the video games. Yeah, I mean, just putting those two together is really great. So I think I'm going to cut it off here. As always, you can leave a comment or a question or a suggestion. And if you have anything you want me to talk about in the future, go ahead. I wish I had more stories about Japan, my time there. But I kind of just focus on video games, which is pretty much a solitary event or activity. So I don't think there's really in any int anything interesting to really say about that. So yeah, I do miss the times of playing video games. And it was very satisfying to know that I was progressing in the video game because I had studied so hard. So I guess there's that aspect too. There's that feeling, it's a rewarding feeling when your study of English or Japanese actually pays off in the real world, whether that's having a successful conversation with your neighbor, or in this case, being able to progress in a very text-heavy game and understand what everything that's going on because you had studied so hard. Kind of reminds me too, maybe this will be my final story or point, or story, is that feeling is so great when, again, your studies pay off, right? Your hard work pays off. Is that there was a certain point when I could just watch movies or TV shows in Japanese and not need the dictionary and not have to translate anything in my head. I'm not saying I understood 100% of everything in the movies or TV shows, but feeling comfortable enough to understand what I needed to know without, again, using a dictionary and without translating in my head. And that took a while, but I did it every day. And yeah, there was a certain point, I want to say maybe, well, when I lived in Japan, it was a lot easier, of course, but I would say within about a year of living in Japan, I had studied before that, of course, so I'm not saying it only takes 1 year total, but within that first year of being in Japan, I was watching movies and TV shows and not translating anything in my brain. I was understanding at that moment, if you under there was no delay, and such a rewarding feeling. And I know that that was quite an achievement, because now when I watch Japanese TV shows, which I do occasionally, because I'm preparing for a trip to Japan about 3 months from now, is that now when I watch Japanese TV shows, my brain has to catch up. I mean, it's and I have to look up some things in the dictionary. So, but I think you have that, you know, that feeling as well, especially if you visit your home country for a few weeks and then you come back to the U.S. Your English is not quite as good as it was before. So yeah, I'm gonna stop there, but not sure what I'm gonna talk about for the next podcast next week. But if you have any suggestions, please let me know.